Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome back good friend of the show, Chad Myers, and his friend, Kylie Marsh, both individuals passionate about mental wellness, physical wellness, and overall well-being. So, guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us again.
Welcome,
Kylie.
Yeah. So I know you guys have a lot of things you want to share with this year coming to a close and a new year on deck with some of the things that individuals can do to help meet their goals, help stick to their goals, since, that seems to be a sticking point for everybody. But I want to press rewind a little bit. Chad, I know we know a little bit about how you got into physical well-being and mental well-being. But Kylie, if you could try to press rewind to the point where this comes into your life and starts to make a significant impact on you.
Well, it really all started when I was about 20. I found myself in a really abusive relationship. And as I was getting out of that relationship and trying to unwind that situation, I found fitness. And through that, it really like opened up this whole new pathway for me of taking care of myself and also feeling empowered and like in control of myself as well.
Yeah, empowered. That's a big word. Mm-hmm. Well, talk to me a little bit about what fitness brought for you in that trying time.
Well, during that time for me, it was a safe place. Like it was a place where I could kind of go and be with my emotions and channel them physically, which was really important because there was a lot of anger and stress and feeling very misunderstood. So it was a great outlet for me to channel all of that.
And you started that on your own volition?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so that's something that's a sticking point for people. Talk to me about the moment where you had your proverbial shit or get off the pot moment where it's like, I'm going to take care of myself or I'm going to wallow.
Oh, I think it really came down to, a lot of the abuse that I was facing in the relationship was a lot of criticism for the way that I looked. And like it really had embedded deeply in me. And so I decided, like, I'm not happy with this. I want to change it. So I went out and sought a personal trainer and everything changed.
Well, that's an operative question there. Maybe either one of you can field this one or both of you. Talk about the importance of finding a trainer or someone that can help you in the initial onset of having goals like that.
You want to take it away?
I'll start. I think it's a partnership. It's accountability, but a partnership. I think what a coach / trainer does is they sit down with people and find out what they really, really want. And then they work with them. And I like to say, I like to walk with people to their destination. And I'll give you an example. I like to share a story. So I had a client come to me last year. She was 85 and she was at a crossroads. She had a gait. She was shuffling her feet. People wanted her to go to a nursing home or assisted living. And she said, no way. And so she came to me and I do a little bit more than just train. I get people into their mindset. And so I said, why do you really want to train? Like, what's your why? And she said, oh, I want to dance again. And I said, wow. Okay, right on. She goes, I want to dance. I used to dance on tables. And so I'm like, wow, there's her why.
Yeah.
And so I said, I will find every exercise I can find to help you dance again. And so it just became a partnership. And then about, 3 months in, she said, I'm taking Argentina tango dancing now.
Yes.
And so from there, now she works out with me 2 or 3 times a week. She dances 2 times a week. She walks all over the city. It literally helped save her life and change her life. And so I like to partner with people and help them with their goals. I don't think people change I think people change when they have somebody walk with them and believe in them. Sometimes I think I mentioned this last time, people have to borrow our belief sometimes. We believe in them until they can believe in themselves.
Right.
I also realized that this person, this particular client had already had a growth mindset. We talked about that last time. If I say do 10 reps, she does 15. So that kind of helps.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure Kylie's got all kinds of stories too, but that's just one example.
Yeah, I guess to like tag on to what you were saying, it's definitely a partnership and it's nice to have somebody to hold you accountable and guide you to your goal. But I think it can also be an enjoyment factor as well. I feel like a lot of the reasons people don't stick to their goals is because, their goal is something that's extrinsic. It's like outside of them.
Right.
So it's very hard to connect to. So having a trainer is kind of that intrinsic of like, I enjoy my trainer. I enjoy our conversation. I enjoy our time together. So it makes me want to go to the gym. It makes me want to stick to this goal that I have.
Yeah, it's more of a broader investment than almost at that point.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny you mentioned that because when I see you training clients and then you see me training clients, oftentimes we're laughing with our clients, exactly. Talking and laughing and just joking around. And that's what I did when I was a teacher as well. So I think that relationship piece was so key. I don't know like other trainers, but I watch how people interact. And you have such a great relationship with your clients, and I do as well. So I think that's the game changer, is that relationship piece.
Mm-hmm. What do you think sets apart a more symbiotic relationship like you're talking about versus one that people have in their heads where it's like, oh, I don't want to go to a trainer or to a coach because I'm just going to be bossed around and made to feel like I'm always trying to get to where I'm not getting to?
Well, I think that that relationship, again, is being able to see the goal together. And sometimes the right trainer has a little bit different perspective. You know, like a lot of my clients will come in and they're like, I want to lose 20 pounds in 2 months. And I'm like, that is great. Like, I love that for you. However, that's not really realistic.
Right.
Because you're going to be pushing yourself too hard. You're going to be dieting too hard. You're going to hate the journey and you're never going to see it through.
Right.
So let's slow it down. You know, let's do maybe 4 or 5 pounds a month for 4 months. And we're still going to get you to that goal. But here's a way that we can do it that's enjoyable and isn't going to kill you.
Right. Well, do you find that people oftentimes will get dissuaded from achieving their goals because they make unrealistic goals?
Absolutely. So another thing, too, just to kind of add on to what Kylie was saying is I like to do motivational interviewing, like asking them what do they really, really want.
Right.
Asking them the why part of that is huge. And then getting them involved in the setting the goals and then looking at it like maybe a month or two down the road and say, how are we doing? I also believe that we need to measure, like, okay, I want to get to B. Well, let's look at A. Where are you? And how do you want to get, and what do you want to look like at the end of B? So we go into, I like measuring. My friend Dr. Brett and I work with people. We take a diagnostic on their height, weight, their ideal body mass, all those things, age. All into consideration, and then we get the baseline, and then we can create a plan to get them to where they want to go. So, yes. And as far as doing too much, too many changes at once, I think what happens is people get overwhelmed. They say, I'm going to change A through Z.
Right.
And we can't focus on that much change at once. And so we have to decide what do we want to change first, and then we can I call it habit stacking. You can stack
I
new
love
habits.
That.
Yes.
Habit so. Stacking. That's talk to me a little bit about how you both see the importance of habitual behaviors that you've been able to employ in your own life that helps you share this with other people. Because I think that's one of the things that people lose sight of pretty easily. How much easier things can become once they're habitual and how quickly you can lose a habit.
Go ahead. You take it.
Well, okay. So for a good example for me is I've been really, really careful and mindful about the food that I consume for probably about 12 years now. So when I first started, it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Like I could not stick to a meal plan. I'd go through periods where I did really, really good. And then as soon as I had a cheat meal, like it was all out the window. And it took me years upon years upon years of practicing that behavior to the point now that I don't know how to eat otherwise.
Right. That's the power of the habit.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's not an overnight thing. It's something that, you know, with practice, I always say like behavior change is like it's like developing your muscles. You know, you don't walk into the gym and do a 350-pound deadlift like right off the bat. Right. Like you start off with 75 and
right.
Then you do 80, you know, and it's the same with behavior. Slowly but surely.
Yeah. Someone says, I want to run a marathon. I'm like, when's the last time you went for a walk? And that might have been a couple of years ago. So start out walking. You have to crawl before you can walk, before you can run. And so sometimes people start off too fast. They want to make too many changes all at once. And so I think that's part of the fitness coach, too. We know how to read people, how we can help them along the way. And if they're doing too much, and I actually always ask people, too, how do you feel? Because the last thing we want to do is injure our clients.
Of course.
And so it's all about, to me, it's about fitness, It's about flexibility, mobility, core strength, so that people can enjoy their life and have fun. It's no fun when you're waking up with aches and pains and you have all this, these injuries going on. And so that's all part of it as well. I think that we're always looking at people's form and how many reps they're doing, and we can see how much. I like to push people. So I like to push them to the edge, and then I'm like, okay. And then we back off a little bit. But it's kind of a, again, it comes at relationship piece with people. You can tell how much you can push them. Some clients, if I push them too much, they get really frustrated and disappointed. And for others, they're like, I need you to push me more. So everybody's different. It all comes down to everybody's individual differences.
So when you have people that come in with goals that may be overwhelming or things that may be unrealistic, what do you think is the some of the ways that you've been able to help people successfully temper their expectations? Because I do get the sense that a lot of people will give up because their expectations are just too much and it's just unrealistic and they don't know how to self-temper the expectations.
I think like Kylie said, bite-sized pieces instead of like losing 20 pounds in 2 months, let's lose 4 or 5 pounds over 4 months. Just reminding them. I mean, there are tricks and things that you can do to shed the weight quickly. But I think you probably would agree with me. Most people don't have the self-discipline. Like you mentioned the eating piece of that. And I want to bring this to everybody's attention as well. Like, I would say 80% is diet, lifestyle, nutrition, whereas 20-25% is exercise. Would you agree? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so people get so frustrated, like, well, I've been working out for like 6 months, but they didn't change their eating habits. So processed food, which is really – processed food, period, is not bad, but junk food is. And so a lot of times, too, we all know this, like, there's so many additives in the junk food that causes us to want more, and so it becomes very addictive. And so right. people – go to these calorie-dense junk foods that don't fill us up. I just heard this today. So croissant is – like a croissant is like the most calorie-dense food.
With zero fuel.
Yes. It takes – so one baked potato – by the way, there's so many different diets out there, and maybe you'll appreciate this, but I was listening to – he's one of the world's top nutritionists, and he's basically says, just eat like a freaking adult. We get all these different paleo diets and all these different diets. And if you study cultures, different cultures and different where people don't have weight problems, like in Okinawa, Japan, in different parts of the world, well, their diets are totally different.
Right.
We are consuming too much. The meal sizes are too big. And so basically it comes down to calories in versus calories burned. So if I'm burning 4,000 calories a day, but I'm consuming 6, I got 2,000 extra calories that now where's it going to go? It goes on our bodies.
Right. And that's – and maybe both of you can touch on this. That's where I think a lot of people that are maybe armchair quarterbacks that get into this just think to themselves, well, if I operate at a caloric deficit, I'll lose weight. But it isn't that easy, and you're certainly not going to become fit just through a caloric deficit. So talk to me a little bit about the misnomer of, for want of a better way of putting it, starving yourself. You can't just cut things out.
I think that people – no, you can't because your body's not made – like we have to have energy. So it's basically taking that food as energy to help us power through the day, whether it's through a workout or through the workday. You have to have energy. So,
well, that's actually what a calorie – is.
Yes.
That's one of the things people forget. Do you guys have a good way of probably a more articulate way of saying what a calorie is than I do?
It's basically, like you said, energy. I think
it's
that
a unit of energy.
Yeah, it's a unit of measurement. There's some wacky math behind it as to how much heat can be created by us when we burn one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So like oils, like canola oils and olive oils have the most calories per but then something like I think it was iceberg lettuce has the least amount. So if you go to the spectrum, you have like 60 calories in lettuce where you have like 4,000 in a – I can't remember the exact amount, but they were saying these are on the extreme ends. So you can't have that oil and think it's going to fill you up.
Right.
It's just like someone saying, okay, you get 3,000 calories a day. And if you consume pizza all day long and that's your 3,000 calories, you're going to be hungry because it's not going to fill you up. So we need food that is going to give us that's going to sedate us, is going to give us, we're going to feel full afterwards. They did lots of studies on this, and there's certain foods that make us feel full, and there's certain foods that just don't last, and then we're starving.
So what are some of the tips, if we're going to maybe dovetail a little bit into tips for the next round ahead, what are some of your tips for eating for 2025? Because we are inundated with two things right now. One, you touched on processed food, but that kind of dovetails into the second one, which is cheap food. And you see in times like this, when we have economic disparities, you see a lot of people have to gravitate towards inexpensive food, which can be horribly detrimental to us physically. So maybe some of the things that you guys think are roundly good places to be looking for more intellectual minded nutrition, and maybe some of the things that don't cost $1 million to feed yourself well.
Well, I'd have to say, so my big tip is maybe a little bit more ethereal, not so concrete necessarily. But when it comes to food, I think that the reason people have such a tough relationship with food is the same reason that they have a tough relationship with New Year's resolutions or goals. It's because their goals, these things that we want, are extrinsic. There's a lot of shame wrapped in our motivation to do so. So most people that I meet, when they want to change their diet, they want to start eating better, it's very shame-based. And that in and of itself is a dead end. Shame can never be your primary motivator. It will always dupe you. So my tip to people would be, instead of saying, like, I want to lose weight or I only want to eat healthy, lean into more the feeling of it. Like, I want to learn to enjoy healthier foods, which is a much more maintainable, like, achievable goal, which is, okay, like, I don't like broccoli. So I'm going to try this year to figure out a way for me to like broccoli. So that way it's not something, it's not just like, okay, eat this, don't eat that, you know, which is so limiting, so shame-based. This is more of like an open, like, how can I learn to love my body so much that I'm learning to enjoy these foods that actually nurture my body?
Yeah, that's interesting, because there is somewhat of a rigid framework, you know, broccoli is good for you and donuts are not. So it's like you do have to try to find a way. You can't just tell yourself donuts are going to be good for me.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love it. You're spot on. Shame, it doesn't last for change. It may start the motivation, but no, it's self-love. I think, too, there's like – I think that actually healthy foods, there's so many ways to prep stuff. Like today I was craving something, and so something sweet, so I had Greek yogurt, blueberries, and granola for like a lunch snack. So there's different things like this where people can eat that's not unhealthy. Blueberries are sweet. If you ever like had like a sweet pepper, they're sweet.
Yeah.
Again, it takes time. Our taste buds get used to this.
That's what I was just going to ask. Do you feel that some of, for want of a better way of putting it, our Americanized corn syrup drenched palate doesn't taste that?
Correct.
By design.
Yeah.
By design. Entirely by design. This is the marketing of corporate America, is these foods that are made very cheaply, that are processed food, that's what processed foods are. They're very cheaply made. They're marketed in a way that they taste better. And not only like what he was saying about food density as well. If you notice, most foods that we consider junk foods are actually soft. And this is also by design, because the way that the flavors hit our tongue and the way that it's soft means that your brain doesn't necessarily register how much food that you're eating. So it's not just that, you know, like we all have no self-discipline. It's also that we're all caught up in this spiral of these companies actually manipulating us to get us to eat more junk food.
Correct. Yeah. So we get into that shame base. Oh, look at me again. I blew it. So if I say to you, you are not allowed to have pizza, just out of human nature, you're going to eat a pizza if I tell you can't have one. So it really comes down to, if I tell people they can't eat certain things, it goes back to what do you want to look like? What do you want to feel like? It goes down to also think about how much more energy you're going to have. Like, people don't realize food, if you eat the right food, you have energy. I also want to talk a little bit, and I know you probably have some knowledge on this too, is intermittent fasting.
Yes.
So if we wait 12 to 16 hours, it actually has positive benefits on our body. So if
humongous.
You eat it, like at 6 o'clock at night and you wait until like noon the next day, even it does incredible things. So sometimes we're just eating too much too often. Like if you look at our ancestors, they were hunting all the time and gathering all the time, and they were walking 12 miles a day. I highly doubt that they were stopping anywhere else and sitting around eating. It's just a totally different society. Now we get up from the refrigerator or go from the couch to the refrigerator to get the food. And so it's just so convenient. So we have so much abundance of food. And you mentioned earlier, where can we get food that is cost effective?
Yes.
Well, we can grow our own vegetables. There's a farmer's market right downtown here, Sarasota. Lots of towns have farmer's markets that is relatively inexpensive. Like lean meats, fish are good for us. I know that some people say, oh, I'm a vegan or I'm vegetarian. Again, it goes, not everybody can eat the same diet, or I don't think there's such a thing as, well, you like everybody should be this or everybody should be that. We're all different, but we do need grains. We do need vegetables. We do need fruits, and we do need meats. That's just how we're built. That's just what I believe, and also what a lot of the research says. I don't know how you feel, but what's your idea about intermittent fasting, or what you have you heard about it?
So my feelings when I'm working with all my clients is always do what feels best, because there are so many different avenues. There is intermittent fasting. There's all of these different ways of eating. And it always comes down to what is going to be easiest for you to constantly stick to more than anything.
Right.
So if that's something that works for you, do it 100%. Yep. If that's something that you struggle with, don't do it. You know, so I definitely think it's an avenue, but I always say I don't believe in isms. I don't believe in anything that is a concrete, this is how it is.
Right.
Because life is not white and black. There's a lot of gray. So it's about discovering yourself and discovering what works best for you. And there are a lot of people who struggle with portion management, where that is an amazing opportunity for them, because they can fast and they can eat a little bit bigger meals because there's less time that they can do so. But it just comes down to your body and how you operate naturally.
Yeah, just as an aside, that's 100% me. I've been intermittent fasting for over 10 years at this point. And it's one of those things that I fall into that latter camp where I can go 12, 18, sometimes 22 hours easily without eating. But then when I eat, I will take down a massive meal. And I never ate like that before I did this so routinely. It's not always like that, but there are days when it's just like, oh my God, I can eat a horse right now.
Well, who's more focused, a full lion or a hungry wolf?
Right.
Like, it's funny, and even in the like business world, you got to be hungry. So that hunger can actually create that focus and that energy that you need sometimes. But I would agree, every individual is different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's important to kind of tailor a program to everybody's needs. So if I'm working with, for example, my 86-year-old client, I don't think she's going to be eating like 6 meals a day.
No.
So just again, it goes down to age, you know, what you're trying to accomplish. Are you trying to get fit and lean? Are you trying to put on muscle? I have another client who's in his 50s and he says, I want to put on weight. I'm like, well, you should be eating more. At least a gram, gram and a half per of your whatever your body weight is per day. And he has been eating a lot more, and he's been working out a lot more, and I've been actually having him lift heavier. So he doesn't want to lose weight. He wants to put muscle on and gain weight.
And build up that energy.
Yep.
So talk to me a little bit about that. This is something that you guys may have heard the term before called front-loading your life. The amount of working out or maintenance you can do now is going to make it so you have a better quality of life when you hit some of these stages you're talking about. What are some of the things that you two find to be advantageous for not only quality of life in the short term, but more longevity of life, more being able to dance on the table longer?
Right.
You know, I know we can maybe all make it to 86, some of us, but we want to make the 86 dancing on the table. So I'm wondering, what are some of the things that you find to be advantageous to kind of be in line with that front loading your life, things that are going to keep the quality up longer?
I'd have to say an overall commitment to balance. You know, the more that you make your goal balance, the more that you start, like we said, habit stacking, so that you're building these long-term habits that stay with you over time. Because at the end of the day, like, longevity comes from a consistent practice of well-being, right? You could be the healthiest person on the planet until you're 50 years old and then stop doing all of those habits and you're still going to die young.
Right.
Like, it's a matter of really committing and building up these habits so that you have this lifestyle that's easy for you to achieve daily that has all of these aspects of longevity. So it doesn't even have to be, you know, these big extremes. Sometimes it's just, I work out 30 minutes five times a week, and I make sure I drink lots of water, and I eat well. I'm not perfect, but I eat well. That's something that somebody can do the rest of their lives. And continuing those practices is what ultimately creates longevity.
What do you think square one of that looks like? Your habit stacking, when I saw you post that a couple weeks ago or last week, I love that. I'm all about habit stacking now. It's easier for... I shouldn't say it's easier. I don't have a problem with it because I've been stacking habits my whole life. I'm all about it. I can't stop doing it. I have a problem stacking habits. I don't remember what square one of habit stacking looks like. What, when you're trying to help people develop the habit of making habits, what does square one of habit stacking look like?
Well, for me, I always tell my clients, step one is always nervous system regulation. You cannot change any behavior pattern without first being able to self-regulate. That's step one. If you're always in survival mode, you're never in rest and nest. And rest and nest is literally step one to making any change in your life. And a lot of these bad behaviors that people have, bad behaviors, I say, quote, are really just them attempting to cope with their nervous system. Like, a lot of people who struggle with food, it's because they're using food as a coping mechanism to self-regulate. So for them to even change, step one is figuring out how to regulate your nervous system on your own so that you then can begin to make these changes.
And that goes back to the self-love. And one of the best ways to self-regulate, exercise, right? Walks, being in nature. You know, these are things that we can control. There are certain things that we can control and things we can't.
Right.
So also, too, I think looking into the future at your future self, I hope my future self thanks me for all the things I'm doing now. But, you know, like, I do some of the things. So, like, my son just came to visit and we played beach frisbee. I can't play beach frisbee if I'm not flexible and I'm not, you know, like, running on the sand is tough.
Right.
And I mean, I felt it, but I have daily stretching routines. I go to yoga twice a week. I work out, I walk, and all those things. So to me, it allows me to have freedom and the flexibility to do those things. And so then I look at someone like my client who's much older. She's dancing. So you can look at your future self and say, I'm going to love myself now, and my future self is going to thank me for that.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's
also, most illnesses are because people of their lack of wellness practices, because they're not regulating their nervous system, because they're using food or other activities or even the phone to distract them from really just learning how to self-regulate. And so part of self-regulation is emotional, and that's part of emotional intelligence. So I think it's taken agency. Like, I've had enough. I mean, there was a point in your life where you said, that's it. And there was a point in my life, I've had two, maybe three times in my life where I had to say, that's it, because I was in shape and then I got out of shape and I got back into shape. But there are triggers that cause us to maybe go backwards. But then there's also something, some kind of a inciting force that says, that's it. I've had enough. And once you make that decision, and that's what I ask a client, what do you really, really want? And then they tell me. And my next question is, how committed are you to this goal?
Right.
And if it's like five, I'm like, are you sure that's the right goal? Because, like, when I have the right goal, it's all in. Are you all in? Mm-hmm. I'm all in. It's like a 10. Mm-hmm. I will walk on water or walk through a wall if I have a 10 commitment. So, yeah, I'd just like to add that to your question.
Well, when you see people at... I guess this is kind of my operative question for those that feel like they can't. When you're at that point when you're saying to yourself, enough is enough, and we all have that for a myriad of reasons, right? But enough is enough can go one of two ways. Enough is enough can go, oh man, I'm fucked. This is awful. I'm just going to plant my head in my ass and everything can just get worse. And then the other half of that is I can scoop myself up. I can go have a workout, even if it's only 30 minutes today and 30 minutes. You know, there is at the moment when you can break one way or the other, what do you think helps people break a positive direction? Because we all know what it's like to say enough is enough. It's what do you do when that, not everybody turns that into the positive.
I think it goes back to the relationship what they have with their personal trainer or their fitness coach, because.
Well, what if you're on Lonely Dog Island?
That's a great question. I think reaching out, it's hard to do it alone. We need each other. So I think reaching out to a friend, a family member, if you can't reach out to a personal trainer, I think reaching out to other people, I think we've talked about this last time, is that it's even the people who are on the POW camps, they couldn't go about it alone. They created that tap code.
Right.
So we need each other. We're social creatures. Without that social connection, they're suffering. And so I would say to somebody who's feeling lonely or I can't do this by myself or it's too late, I've gone too far, I'm too overweight or I'm too depressed, reach out. Reach out to us, reach out to somebody. It's our brains are sometimes they're not our friends. And so our brains are going to come up with a negative narrative first. Our brains are just negative bias. So it's going to tell us a negative narrative. And so what I love to do is to shift the narrative. Yes, this is the old narrative. Yes, this is the old patterns. But we can shift the narrative. We can shift the patterns. Let's do this together. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, to curtail on that, because I was actually going to bring that exactly up. I think that moment of the no return or the everything is going to change
right.
is actually more neurological than we think. That negative feedback or negative feedback bias that he was talking about, this is something that we see very commonly, especially in Western society, because right. we are very left-brained in our society. And the left brain is actually fully responsible for the fear response, which that fear response is what causes a lot of the analysis paralysis, mm-hmm. right? Is that
Agreed.
People think too much mm-hmm. and we're losing touch with the right side of our brain, which is feeling, it's community, it's creativity. So a lot of that moment of like, am I going to give up forever or am I going to change? Sometimes it's a shift of the brain, which is the hardest thing to do because right. we're talking about rewiring the brain. But it could be as simple as reaching out and finding community. It could be as simple yeah. as listening to a song that makes you feel good. Like I always tell people, in that moment, you don't have to go from 0 to 100. But if you can go from 0 to 3, that's a win.
Right.
It's just how can you feel a little bit better? And just that a little bit better will guide you in that direction towards everything's going to change.
Yeah, that's when you can start to get some of that exponential growth, when you can get off the blocks just a little bit.
Yes. We talked about this earlier, even today. So the body keeps the score. A lot of times we can change our brain by changing our body. So
right.
There's just certain things that we can do to change the chemistry in our brain. And so we found, too, that when working out with clients, all of a sudden they start opening up and talking.
Right? Of course.
And if you sit like across from someone, they may not. But boy, you can start getting exercise in their movement. All of a sudden, something happens up here. And then again, it's through that relationship piece. They start sharing things with you and you're like, oh, wow. And then you realize, oh, this is what happened. And this is how it's almost like help me help you. Right. They're telling right. you mm-hmm. this is how you can help me. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's that whole conversation and that relationship piece again.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing what your mind and body will do when you give them the space to do it. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a word a couple of times that's a hot-button word around here, and that's accountability. Accountability seems to be the crux of a lot of people's dispositions, regardless of whether or not they're good or bad. I'm wondering if you could each tell me what accountability means to you and how you help people develop accountability, because that is a scary road.
I think accountability is believing in others until they can believe in themselves. And that a lot of times it's asking, how did you do this week? You said you wanted to do this. How did you do? and how can I help you? But I also think it's shifting people from accountability to responsibility, to respond with ability. So I don't want a client for the next 10 years counting on me to help them change.
Right.
Then it becomes enabling.
Well, then you're just doing the accountability for them.
Right. So I think it may take time over time, but I think it's teaching people, you got this. You mentioned it took you a long time to change your habits, your eating habits, but once you got it, you got it. And I'm sure you had somebody there that was kind of helping you along the way to hold you accountable and pick you back up. And I'm sure you notice this too. It's like all or nothing. Like, oh, I went 4 days in a row and then I blew it, so I just stopped. No.
Right.
No. Okay, you blew it, but then tomorrow you can start over again. It's not all or nothing. So.
Mm. Yeah, I like that responsibility over accountability.
Yeah, that's a new one to me.
Yes, because I think accountability can be so rigid. And again, it's that like zero or 100 way of thinking.
Right.
Because I have a lot of times with my clients where they'll be like, oh, but like I fell off yesterday and I didn't work out. And I'm like, that's fine because you still worked out three other times this week. It's not about perfection. It's about slow micro changes in the right direction. You know, a one degree shift every day over 360 days is a 360 degree shift. It's not about doing it overnight. So I think a lot of that accountability, too, is just reminding people that they're still on the right path. They're still doing the work.
Yep.
Even that the path to greatness is not linear.
No.
It's not linear. It's up, it's down. Sometimes it's way down, you know, but as long as you're keeping your eye on the prize, that's what matters most.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, too, very key. There's extrinsic and intrinsic motivators. So people who say, I'm going to hike the Appalachian Trail, the ones that finish are intrinsically motivated.
Of course.
They don't say, I want my gold medal. They're like, I decided to do this with a group of people and we decided to finish this together. It's the greatest experience I ever had.
Right.
It had nothing to do with their accolades and look at me. It had to do with their intrinsic motivators. So I think it's really important to find out, too, the intrinsic reasons why people want to do things. Extrinsic motivation usually doesn't last.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that motivation can last?
Good question.
Because just all cards on the table. I'm one of those people that feels like motivation isn't worth the powder to blow it to hell. That the only real thing left is self-discipline. Motivation comes and goes. You can never really rely on it. And the reason why I personally adopt that attitude is because, and this is what I wanted to ask you, when you're trying to give somebody who's on a path of growth a break along the way, because we all inevitably stumble, some people can use that as really good fodder for their excuse-making cannon. How do you keep people from not using a reasonable opportunity to give oneself a break on a path of growth to not be able to be habit stacking excuse making?
So I'm sure you have clients that say, I don't feel motivated anymore. And I think that's normal. It goes back to just being human. But also, motivation is really dopamine. Like, if you don't feel motivated, you're not really going to go after something. And so there's certain things that you can do. But to me, it goes back to it comes down to really mindset, your commitment, and you're committed to the growth. You're committed to becoming a better version of yourself. So and that might be why. What's your why? Well, again, that's one person might be dance. One person might be, I just want to be a better example as a dad or as a friend. Or obviously there's pressure on us to be examples as trainers. We talked about this today, how there's a lot of pressure to keep looking fit because, like, that's what we do for a living. I mean, so there is that pressure. And I think it comes back to that why again. The why is really huge.
I agree. I think there's two different types of motivators. There's fear-based motivators and there's love-based motivators. Hmm. Fear-based motivators will never last. Love-based motivators always, always last. So if you're doing it because, oh, I want to lose weight because I'm afraid of what people think of me when they see me, that's never going to last. But I want to lose weight because I want to play with my grandchildren. Hmm. You're going to lose the weight. It really comes down to, like you said, the intention. Is it love or fear?
Do you find that depending on what side of that crux you break on, is really the determining factor as to how long you can stick with this, because that's when motivation can become self-discipline?
I think so. I think when your motivation comes from a place of joy and love, the journey is something that feels good and something that you enjoy and you look forward to, so you stay motivated. Versus, you know, something motivated by fear, that journey is really uncomfortable, and it's, again, full of shame, and it's a very heavy, very heavy path. So I think that one always fails because of that.
Yeah, if I add to that too, I actually have, you know, fitness clients, but I also have coaching clients in the business world. And a lot of times too, people, they're motivated. They think they're motivated. This is what I really got. And they get to the top of the mountain. They're like, this is it? Is this what I really, really wanted? Like, I'm here. I arrived. And they're alone. And they've been successful, whatever that means to them. And then they realize, oh, wait. I think I'm in the wrong forest. I think I should be over here instead. And so a lot of times we're going after things that we really don't want, and we're motivated by whatever society tells us is successful.
Right.
Again, it goes back to that inner, what do I really, really want? What's my intentions? Why am I going for it? As opposed to somebody else gave me an idea. They said I should do this, and I'm going to do this because someone else said I should do it.
Right. Well, you said having a why a couple of times, and that reminds me of the adage, if you have a why, you don't need to know how. You can bear any how, okay? What about the people that don't have a why? How do you help people find their why? Because some of us are drifting out here. We had a talk with the last gentleman that was here. Some people are rudderless. What do you do when you encounter rudderlessness?
You got to go back to the basics. You have to peel back all of the pressure from society to find what truly makes the person happy. You know, we're told from the moment that we're born, like, welcome to Earth, find out that one thing that you're really good at, that you're better at than everybody else, even though there's billions of other people on the planet. Harness that, be the best at it, make money off of it, and then show everybody how amazing you are. And we're all walking around with this pressure on our back, and it's blinding. We forget the things that make us really happy. So with my clients, it's always like, how can we peel back these layers and go back to the things that make you happy? Like, oh, you like drinking coffee in the morning and you love petting your cat? Great. Like, that could literally be the purpose of your life. You don't have to pursue this insane pressure of being successful and like chasing all of these standards that have been put forward to you. Like, what at your core are the things that feel good?
That's very powerful. And that leads me to an aside. I'm going to drift a little bit. What do you think about the term toxic hustle culture?
Oh, I think it's very real. You mentioned balance before. I've seen so many people who are out of balance. Think about if your car is out of balance, eventually it's going to go into the ditch. And their health, what's the first thing that usually goes? People's health.
Yeah, can't sleep, can't eat right.
And then they have to use their wealth to get their health back. I think health is our greatest wealth. I think that obviously we have to have wealth, but people sacrifice relationships, their health, their well-being for so-called success. What would you like to add to that?
I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about living in a very material-based society. You know, we're bred since we're little kids to believe that the most important thing in life is achievement. And achievement is great, but again, that's very left-brained. That's very like analytical. When really like the pure joy, light, love, the things that fill us up tend to be so much more simple.
Yeah, there's usually not awards or certifications for that either.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's why I was curious about how much you see in some of the younger generations. The reason why I ask about this toxic hustle culture is because you see a lot of people who, like you said, they're so focused on this left brain, for want of a better way of putting it, way of living, that all of these other things they're just not paying any attention to are just getting sacrificed right out from under their nose. So I'm curious some of the things that you two think are the best ways to find balance when admittedly we are existing in a world with a lot of pressure and, you know, everybody wants to have that plaque on the wall or the certification that says I'm good enough. when really it isn't what that's all about?
I think it comes down to starting to revalue feeling. Feeling will guide you throughout your life. And absolutely, you need a balance. You have to survive in society. As much as I'd love to just not go to work all day long yeah. and meditate and journal and do all the lovely things. But it has to come down to feeling and valuing that and starting to slow down and listen to ourselves. Mm. Because your body, your mind, your soul will tell you when you're in that toxic hustle culture, because you're going to be burnt out. You're going to be exhausted. You're going to have brain fog. Like 3 p.m. hits and you want to take a nap. And that is everything within you indicating that this is not the right path, you know? So it's like slowing down feeling, because when you have that balance of like, okay, like I'm achieving things that feels really good, but also I'm having time for the people that I love and I'm having time for the things that I love, that feels good. So I feel energized. I feel happy. I don't feel stressed out. Like it comes down to feeling more versus always thinking.
You mentioned slow down to speed up. I just absolutely love that, because clarity, calmness of mind is a superpower. And if I'm hustling and I'm all stressed out and I'm going from one thing to another and I'm in traffic and I'm all over the place and then I'm going to be all stressed out, I'm not going to be able to be present. I think what I've noticed about Kylie and I is we're very present with our fitness clients or with all our clients in general, but it's that presence of mind. And so if I'm in a state of mind where I can be really present, I can really help that person. But if I'm rushing from one thing to another, and that person's just a number or another dollar sign or whatever, I'm not going to treat them like a human being. I'm not going to be present.
Right.
So another thing too, I just heard the other day is put white space in your calendar. And they're like, what's white space? That's when you don't have anything planned. You just put it in your calendar.
See, and that seems so counterintuitive, because we are living in a world where there's other people saying literally the direct opposite. You want to prove your worth, pack your calendar.
Well, you can have a packed calendar, but by God, I can tell you this. If I'm in front of my computer all day, or I'm doing a Zoom client, or I'm doing a fitness client or whatever, and I don't take time for myself to go for a walk, to exercise, like, do you exercise? Right? So, right. It's self-care. So you're doing the things that you're telling your clients to do, and I'm doing the same thing. That's that white space. I might need a walk. Matter of fact, sometimes where I go from client to client to client, if I don't have space in between, I find that I'm not as good as a coach as I could have been.
I think that's a very dated way of thinking that I think is starting to collapse. You know, even people like Tony Robbins. I just had a client come back from a date with Destiny. And one thing, a big take home for her was Tony was like, yeah, I used to sleep only 3 hours a night because I was all about the grind.
Right.
And now my body's falling apart and I'm realizing that actually did me, sure. Like I made all this money, I did all these things, but I need a body that's healthy for me to enjoy these things.
The grind ground me down.
Well, it's funny, but you know, when I was in Barcelona, siestas are real things.
Right.
Businesses would shut down for 3 hours or more. I know NASA did a study. They made their astronauts take naps and they worked 6 more hours. What's wrong with, like you said, 3 o'clock? That's when your circadian rhythms are low. The lowest is between 2 and 4. I tell people this, like if you want to pick a time to do a meeting and it's and you want people's attention, you probably shouldn't have between 2 and 4.
No, no, that's the first thing in the morning.
Definitely
thing.
Not.
Yeah, that well, if you have any opinion on this, please share it about sleep and sleep health and regulating your sleep and what that means. Because I know a lot of people have a very hard time sleeping soundly, sleeping restfully. I'm one of those people that when I go off the leash, I sleep in shifts. I'm up very late. I'm up very early, but I'll sleep in the afternoon for maybe an hour or two. And I'll sleep for 6 hours in a day or 8 hours in a day, but it was 4 here and 4 there. And that seems to work for me. And whenever I've gone on default in my life, that's what happens to me. So I guess it's the way my body wants to run things. But I know everybody is very different and sleep is very important for your physical well-being and mental well-being. So I'm curious what your guys' take is on that.
I think, again, like you're saying, like each body is different. But, you know, even if you're sleeping 4 hours here and 4 hours there, you're still getting like 8 hours of rest. You know, and I think the studies have shown that without a decent amount of sleep, even if it's broken up, it still counts, even in the studies. But you do need a certain amount of sleep for your body to recover, for your body to do a lot of processes that it can't do when you're conscious. But right. I think even more importantly than the physical aspect of sleep, sleep is a time for you to turn off your brain and reset. And that's the most important part. It's like, tune out from the matrix for a little bit and like recharge your soul, your spirit, your mind to right. come back.
I think also, well, our brain, it's funny, people think we're learning when we're like in a training or in a classroom, really learning when you're sleeping. The brain files things away when you're sleeping. If you don't sleep, it's really hard. People say, oh, I studied all night and I only slept like an hour, I couldn't remember anything. It's because your hippocampus was closed.
Yeah.
It's like you can't get in. The information's in there, but you can't get in. You're too stressed. And so I think evening routines are huge. My friend Dr. Brett used to work at the Olympic training facility, and he said, lights out at 9. And like literally you start dimming the lights. So I started this practice, like my phone, I put on grayscale after 9. Also, too, looking at our phones before bed, not a good idea.
I was going to ask you both about the phones.
Not a good idea. Don't get me started with phones, because I just heard a couple of podcasts on this, and I think that you want to know what the real mental health crisis, let's start with the phones. Let's start with how many times people check their phones and how it interrupts our ability to be present with each other and be present in nature. I can't tell you people I see walking across the street on their phones or in the parks on their phones. I'd even take some of my clients into the parks and work out with them, and I said, put your phone away. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a huge problem. And so evening routines and morning routines, I'm big on those. I realized during the holidays it's super hard. I even have lost some of my discipline because I am human. But the holidays, I haven't always made the best choices, and I've stayed up late, and maybe I had too much dessert or maybe too many adult beverages. But I realized that I need to reset and recalibrate and refocus, because that's just not my lifestyle. So it takes – I mean, I even had some clients who say, I'm going to take a break until the first of the year. And I'm like, oh, God, Lord. Yeah. Like, you just created all these habits, and now you have to start all over again, and you're going to complain, and I get to listen to you complain. So I just think that routines in the evening are important, so people sleep with their phones are constantly in their beds or their televisions. All those things are keeping us awake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's so much of we were touching on it before, being able to connect to nature. There's so much of that that's doing the inverse. It's like stripping us of our natural components.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go back to the circadian rhythms. When it gets dark, our brains start to say, oh, it's nighttime, it's time to go to bed. But then you got all this light on and you got the TV on or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of confusing. It's overstimulating. So I think, again, it goes back to taking time and say, okay, I'm going to slowly start changing some of my evening routine so I can go to sleep. Sleep is the foundation of mental health. We have to sleep.
I can really speak to those evening routines as a former insomniac for the majority of my life.
Oh, man. All right, man.
Yeah. I always had a hard time sleeping. And then, like, in the past year, I really dedicated myself to my evening routine. And I have there's no TVs or phones in my bedroom. That is the rule.
Nice. Yep.
And I get into bed about an hour before I plan on going to sleep, and I read or I journal or I do something creative, nice. Kind of like rest a little bit, allow myself to calm down. And also, game changer, I got one of those clocks, those like luminescent clocks.
Yeah.
That start getting brighter in the morning. Also, game changer.
Yes.
Oh. Game changer. Yeah. And ever since I've made these changes, I get in bed and I'm out. I sleep all night. If I wake up feeling rested, so
that's so
powerful.
Well,
it helps that you're working on your hard worker too. I mean, think about it. If you're out hiking all day, or you're out grinding and you're out exercising, when it's time for bed, it's time for bed. Like, you're just out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, especially if you have a good nighttime routine. I had some poor physical health for a number of years, and one of the things I got into was a David Goggins stretching routine, and I built up to being near 2 hours of just straight stretching at night. And that improved my sleep so much. And I was having so many surgeries. And, you know, when they go in for the surgery, they always measure you and weigh you like a fish each time. And after the first year of stretching, I was measuring an inch taller.
Wow.
And this was just, you know, 2 years ago last year. Wow. I mean, I'm still doing it.
Well, stop and think about it. If your body is tense, you know, if you get like your lower back pain and you're trying to sleep, that's going to keep you awake, right?
Right.
Again, the body keeps the score, so the stress stays in the body. How do you get rid of the stress? Well, one of the ways is exercise. I'm going to keep going back to that because I just am such a true believer in it because it really dramatically changed my life. Well, I've been exercising since age 12, but when I even take my foot off the gas a little bit and stop exercising about 3 years ago, huge difference. So stretching, mindfulness meditation, huge before you go to sleep. You mentioned journaling too. So a lot of times that rumination, that monkey brain is going to go off. And so if you can get that onto paper and get it out of your mind and onto paper or even our to-do list, you sleep more soundly.
Going right to the right side of the brain, just saying.
Yep.
So again, you can't really get away from the balance portion of the show. You have to balance what you're doing when you're awake, and you have to balance some type of sleeping health as well.
I mean, I know this, people have said this before, and I know it seems so simple, but we're human beings, not human doings. And I think that we have become human doings. The happiest countries in the world are like Bhutan, the Scandinavian countries. The Scandinavian countries get less sunlight. And so you think, well, isn't America one of the greatest places, the happiest place? No, it's not. Actually, we're one of the most unhappiest nations in the world.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. We could do a whole show on that one. So,
well, I'm curious what you think some of the top shelf reasons are for that.
I think as we flip-flop the hierarchy of needs upside down on its head.
Okay, that was exactly what I was feeling there.
Lack of social connections. I think the social media has actually created a disconnect, not connect. People look at social media and say, oh, my God, I wish I looked like that. Or I wish I could be that person. Oh, that person's – do you think people are posting their drama?
That's
some
everybody's
people do.
Highlight reel.
Some people do post their drama, but like most people are posting, look how great everything is.
Yeah.
No, life is not always great. We have to have the ups and we have to have the downs to have the ups. And you can't always be happy. We're not meant to always be happy. So sometimes we have to feel that sadness, but just you visit it. You don't ruminate in it. And of course, sometimes those feelings, I mentioned this last time, they're messengers. So why am I feeling this way? Feeling sad because, and then you start to get that out. If you don't, people like, I'm not going to feel this. They grab their phone, they watch a movie. They do things to numb themselves.
We got distractional plenty.
That's right. This is the most distracted country in the world by far.
What do you think? I do share the sentiment that we've got our hierarchy of needs upside down, and that's why this whole thing seems to make so much sense, yet we're just running full steam in the wrong direction. If you could turn the hierarchy around a little bit, other than the easy part of putting one's own well-being first, maybe a little bit more nuanced than that, what do you think is some of probably the most operative thing that we could start to keep our eye on a little bit more to fight against what the world's pushing in?
That's a really good question.
I guess the lyric of the song that keeps coming up on this one is, how does one develop, maintain, and then seek solace in self-assuredness? Because this is how we can stay disciplined. This is how we can stay focused. If we have no self-assuredness and there's nobody we can reach out to at that moment, we're all going to backpedal because we're humans.
I think it's important to know who you are, and that goes to your core values. Like, who are you and why are you doing what you're doing? I think that's really important. And then, two, the happiest nations in the world are the ones that actually have a sense of community. They have, like, it's not the size of the group of the friends. It's the tribe that you're involved in. So community is huge. Your social connections are huge. Balance. If you look at some of the people that are living the longest in the blue zones or some of the happiest people, they're the centurions.
Right.
They're outside. and they're working in the gardens. They're meeting every evening for dinner, and you know, they're talking every night, and they're hanging out, and they're spending time with family. So I think that those are huge components of happiness and helping people get plugged back in. I think what's happened is people got into their phones when they get lonely, and they think that they go down that rabbit hole, and it actually creates more loneliness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say mindfulness. I think the most powerful behavior any human can adopt in their journey to wellness is to be able to be present. When you're present, your brain is balanced. You're able to see things more clearly. You'll be able to receive these messages that your body is telling you, whether it's in regards to hunger pains or it's in regards to emotional pains. But when you're present, you can kind of separate yourself from right. the distraction and the noise, which is really the thing that I think is harming most people.
Yeah, and that may be one of our distinctly American things, too. It is exceedingly difficult to be present in anything here when everything is fighting for your attention.
It's so loud.
Mm-hmm. It's very I say that all the time. This is the noisiest place on earth.
So loud.
And I mean it in like when you turn on the TV and just be on Channel Fuzz, it's that. You know, I feel like there's a lot of people tuned to Channel Fuzz out there. It's a lot of din.
Have you guys ever noticed, too, that you're watching a program? I don't watch that much TV, but like when I watch sports, the commercials are so much louder.
Oh, yeah.
They are so much. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to turn that down. Did you mention, like, there is such thing as noise pollution?
Oh, for sure.
And some of the most quietest places on the planet are some of the most the easiest places to meditate and to go back and find yourself. Well, I'm not really sure what that even means, to find yourself, because we're always discovering our new self. But it's a place for us to really reconnect. I know I may have mentioned this before, but the Japanese call it nature bathing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so getting out in nature is huge. That's why I like to get out. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I moved here, is because you can be outside all the time. You can go to the bay. You can go to the golf. You can go to the parks. You can go places and get away from the noise and the city. I think it's huge. And I also believe that communities have gotten too big. The happiest communities there's an ideal number. It's called the Dunbar number. I'm not going to get into all that. But
yeah.
I think that we've kind of over-evolved in many, many ways, and sometimes
right.
we have to scale it back and kind of look at, like, what's really going on.
Well, and that's part of how we've, I don't want to say learned to, but maybe come to the point where we've been able to dismiss our physical and mental health so easily, because we've got all of these other things that are distractions that we can't be present enough to realize, hey, I'm supposed to put on my own gas mask first.
Consumerism.
Yeah.
It's real loud.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's kind of
consume versus create.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the journey is the corporations in this company are never going to stop being loud. They're going to keep being louder. But the more that we tune them out, the more that we start being present and the more we start taking care of ourselves, the less we feed them.
Right.
With our income. Right. And I was going to say this too. We were talking about like healthy food being expensive. Like, yeah, healthy food is expensive, but if you're buying junk food, you're feeding the monster that's creating the problem. Like, it really comes down to just like reassessing your values. Are you enjoying this consumerist lifestyle? Do you enjoy being unhealthy and feeling foggy and sluggish and stressed out? If you like that, stay.
Right.
If that's not where you want to be, you have to start assessing, okay, then what are my values? Okay, I want to feel healthy and energized. I want to be surrounded by a community that I love. I want to do all of these things that I enjoy. So it really is, I've been saying it, like the revolution is so much more simple than people think. People think it's going to be like this, everything's going to stop and all of the buildings are going to burn down. No, the revolution is deciding that you want to love yourself and live a life of love. And that shift alone has
this is the trick, is it not?
Yeah. That's true transformation. I really believe in the hero's journey, and so did Joseph Campbell. And I think that we're on one, and well, everybody's on one, but they don't realize it, that they can actually take the pen and write a new story. I know it sounds simplistic, but that's where it begins. Wait, I don't like this script. I don't like how things are going. This doesn't feel good. This isn't the relationship I want to be in. This isn't the life I wanted. And then you say, well, what do you want? And so you take that pen and you start writing out, what do I want? And what do I need and what do I want? I think sometimes we get caught up in just the wants, but what do you also need?
Right.
Write that down. It's yeah. time for New Year's resolutions, and don't get me started on those. I want to talk about this today.
Yeah.
Most, matter of fact, after 5 weeks, the statistics say that only about 3 to 5% of people keep their New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, there's like a National Quitters Day, isn't there?
Well, it's usually they've done a study. It's like 5 weeks, 4 days, and so many hours for the average person.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've had New Year's resolutions and I kept them, but what happens is people write down, I'm going to change 15 things. No, you're not.
Change your shoes 15 times.
Right. If people say, well, I'm going to go to the gym 7 days a week. How many times have you been going to the gym last week? Zero. How about the week before that? Zero. What about last year? I haven't been to the gym in years. Okay, so maybe we should start with 2 times a week or right. 3 times a week. Again, just start those habits. I think that people need to understand that it's not really a New Year's resolution. It is who do I want to become? How do I become a better version of myself? There's another thing, too, is I used to say this a lot. The best version of yourself. Well, good luck. Like, I want to become a better version of myself this year, but I don't think this year I'm going to be the best. Then I stop growing and evolving. Right. So it's how do I want to become a better version of myself?
Yeah, well, this is kind of that, what you were talking about before. When you reach your goal, it might not be fulfilling. You got to be aware of plateau status. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's important to have that right goal. And I think that's what's important to sit down with somebody who's trained in this, you know. We've both been doing this for a long time, and so I think if you find out what people really, really want and you can help them through it, they then can take and make this their entire lifestyle. It's not just changing one habit. It's eventually changing your entire lifestyle over time, and you're going to mess up.
That's so daunting, though.
Right. And you will mess up.
It is if you only focus on the end result.
Right.
Versus if you can learn to appreciate the benefits of every small progression and celebrate every small progression, that's a totally different perspective.
But you need the commitment to make it to that point.
Process over goals.
Yeah.
Again, like someone says, I'm going to work out 5 days a week. And they said, oh, wah, 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 I only did three. Great, you did three.
Yeah, woohoo.
Wonderful.
Great.
Well, I guess then this begs this question. And I think I mentioned this to you last time we spoke, that the adage that the person that enjoys the walk will go much further than the person who enjoys the destination. Mm-hmm. How do you teach people or how do you help people enjoy the walk instead of focusing on the destination and not walking as far and never making it to the point where they can say, hey, these little things I did have added up?
I always tell my clients there's two ends of the stick. For every thought, there's two ends of the stick, right? There's a positive side and a negative side. So pertaining to weight loss, right? Like, okay, like I only worked out 3 times this week and my goal was 5. That's on the negative end of the stick. The right. positive is I worked out 3 times this week and I feel really good about it. So my way with helping my clients is always trying to guide them to that positive side of the stick, because the negative side, again, is that left side of the brain. It's fear. It's shame. It's like it's heavy. And the more that you can start shifting towards the positive side of the stick, you will actually completely reprogram your brain and your neural connections will be more adapted to being in that positive side of the stick. And when you're in the positive side of the stick, you keep going because you're having a good time and you're happy.
Right. Yeah, I guess from the outsider's perspective, and some, just self-admittedly, I'm far too rigid to see things that way. How do you keep somebody who's, say, let's just use your scenario that they wanted to work out 5 days a week, but they only did three? How do you make it so when they're at three, they're not so close to letting themselves get down to zero, but be up to 4 and 5? Because if you make yourself feel good about three, then maybe I don't need to do 4 and 5. You know, so I feel like I'm trying to understand how you feel about giving anybody any type of leeway. If your goal was 5, 3 is just not good enough. How do you act like 3 is good enough? If the goal was 5, 3 is not good enough by definition.
if you hold people to this belief that like five is the goal, anything under that sucks.
Well, not that it sucks, but by definition, it's failure.
Is it?
Because by definition, it is.
Three times a week is still better than none.
Certainly, but none. You know?
So I think it's a subtle perspective shift that you take on through time, right? Because I could say like, great, you did three times, and there are maybe some minds that would be like, oh, okay, well then I'm only going to do two, and I'm only going to do one. But more often than not, people who can learn to celebrate those three and feel really good about the three want four.
Ah.
They want it because they're proud of themselves and they feel really good. And because they feel really good, they're like, I want more of this feeling.
Ah.
So I'm going to go to four. They're not going to go back because they're getting this used to feeling proud of themselves and accomplished. So from there, it's like a never ending pursuit. You know, it's like if you give a little kid like three marshmallows, they're really stoked about those three marshmallows, but you're like, hey, you can have this opportunity for four. They want four. You know, like that's how we're programmed.
I guess it's more my my aversion to the participation trophy theory. You know what I mean?
Also, too, I think it depends on who you're working with. I know, like, Nick Saban from the University of Alabama had certain standards, and if the guy said, I only practice in three times this week, he said, no, we practice, you know, five times a week. That's a little different. So, again, it goes down to the client. So if somebody's really struggling with weight loss or creating new habits, it's a little bit different. If I'm working with an athlete or someone who is training for an Ironman or something like that, I'm going to say, do you really want this? Do you really want this goal? Because your behaviors are showing that you don't want it, or what's getting in the way? If I ask a client, so I have some business clients, and I normally say to them, look, if you want high performance in business, I can teach you how to do that in your personal life, because your personal performance has everything to do with your professional performance. And so I remind them all the time that your personal habits they'll tell me, oh, I partied all weekend. I'm like, oh, so you didn't work out Saturday, Sunday, or Monday? No. Okay, so what do you want to do about that? And I always put it back on them. Is this what you want? What do you want? And then we work on a plan together. I had somebody who came back from a vacation and he was beating himself up because, you know, he and his wife went on vacation and he didn't work out and he partied a lot. And I'm like, okay, that was last week.
And you eat whatever when you're traveling.
Right. That was last week. What are you going to do this week? So I think it just comes down to the person too. That's why it's important to know the person. I go back to when I taught, there are certain students I needed to push that were resisting certain things. And I said, oh my gosh, this person has so much potential, they don't even see it yet. And so I would say, I want you to try this for me. Go ahead, just go ahead and do this. And I will be there with you. So I think I maybe gave an example before. I can't remember. I've done several podcasts, but I had a student who was terrified of public speaking and spelling in front of other kids. She was the best speller on paper. And I said, would you just, I'll stand next to you. Do the spelling bee. I think you can win this. Are you sure? I'm like, you don't have to, but I really would like you to do it. Try it for me and try it. Just see what happens. She won. She won the school spelling bee, the regional spelling bee, because she tried something. But again, it took me a little pushing her out of the nest because she was so didn't want to get out of her comfort zone. I think that people who get caught in their comfort zones, sometimes we have to push them a little bit, motivate them a little bit, have those conversations, those tough conversations with people, especially if their health is going bad.
Right.
Like, then you really have to say, man, like, I believe that you can change your health by first trying to change your lifestyle. And then if that doesn't work, then maybe you can, go different methods, maybe talk to a doctor or maybe you need meds. But first, let's look at your lifestyle.
So I think what I don't think you'll have to correct me here. But I think what I'm hearing from both of you is it's very important to have that relationship so you can find out where someone's truly at, because that's the only way you can empower them. And really that's the goal, regardless of if it's Nick Saban and you got to have a rigid talk in an athletic environment, or if it's someone who just needs to feel good about three to get to five. It's about finding where you're at and empowering people.
I think as a personal trainer and a coach, we're the quiet in all of the noise.
Ah, I love that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That'd be a great bumper sticker or a t-shirt. Careful with that one. That's your slogan right there.
I love it. Yeah. We're sounding boards. I think you have to be a good listener. I think it's really important to ask really good questions and listen, because people need to look within. The answers are always within. My dad used to say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And so when people are ready, someone always appears, someone shows up. It could be a personal trainer. It could be anybody. But if you really want, I think that we talked about this last time, providence shows up.
Yes.
Something just shows up. You're like, wait, where did this person come from? How did this conversation, like, I was just thinking about this.
Yes.
So, yes.
I believe that. That's humongously powerful, and I appreciate you sharing that. Well, I want to get you guys out of here on something fun. Normally, I'm like some genie in the box question, but I've got a new one that I'd like to ask people, and I think you two are great candidates for this. If I gave you each 10,000 billboards across the United States that you can put any sentence, any motivational quote, any website to lead to more sentences, what do you put on your billboard to help people in this next year around the sun ahead of us?
Wow. A billboard with a message. It's almost like making a tweet or an Instagram. You're way better at social media than I am. I'm kind of curious as what you put on your billboard. So this is your brand? You like our brand?
Anything.
Branding?
Mine would say everything counts in large amounts.
Wow. I don't know if I can answer that question right now. That's tough. I need to think about this for a minute. Do you have an answer?
I was going to say, you'll have to drop it in the comments when we post it. Everybody put their billboard answer in the comments.
I think mine would be find your bliss and do it a lot more.
Love that.
I love that. I would say believe in yourself. Love yourself. It's all about self-love, and self-love creates that self-discipline. And I don't mean a narcissistic love. I mean care about yourself.
Right, right, right.
I think that people don't realize that when you care about yourself, you can care about others. Fill yourself up so you can help fill others up. And so people are trying to fill others up with an empty vessel. If I'm not working out and I'm not sleeping, I'm not doing these things, I don't have anything to give anybody.
So yours will say you can't pour from an empty cup.
There you go. There you go.
Well, Chad, Kylie, I can't thank you guys enough for coming down. You guys have offered some really good insight for helping have some balance and some good hoorah, some self-assuredness, some good self-love in the year ahead. If at any point you guys want to come back, we have always got a home for you here. Chad, you're K the fam. Kylie, you're K the fam now. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and if I could give a shout out to, like, our gym where we train is balance. It's in right downtown, and it's such a happy environment. The trainers are all so friendly. It's a really happy place. And then, of course, we also train clients in other places as well. But we're both on social media, and I'm sure you're gonna.
Yep. Well, I was gonna say, we'll make sure we have all that in the description for sure.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.